Hello, everyone. This is Brenda speaking, and welcome to the IRP IoT call on the 2nd of March, 2021 at 1900 UTC. This call is recorded. Attendance will be taken from the Zoom, and I'd like to remind you to please state your name before speaking and have your phones and microphones on mute when not speaking. And Susan, I'll turn the call over to you. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Brenda. So hi, everyone. Welcome to the IRP IoT meeting on the 2nd of March. Can't quite believe we're in March 2021 already. So we'll just kick straight off. We will be reviewing the agenda and updates to SOIs. Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm hoping that it will rectify itself. Why? Cutting out?
Susan, this is Brenda. I am happy to dial out to you if you want to private message your phone number.
Sure.
Thank you.
If it was still cutting out, then I guess I better had. So apologies for this, everyone.
Bernie, I hear nothing. I don't know whether there is something going on or whether it is a silence.
We just dialed out to Susan. She should be able to unmute her line and speak. One moment.
Okay. How is that? Is that any better?
You sound a little far away. I know.
Okay. How about that? Is that any better?
I can hear you. Okay. Everyone else? I think we can go ahead with that, Susan. Thank you.
Okay. Yeah, sorry about this. I don't know what the problem is. I think it's because of the time of night. Everyone's turned on Netflix and Amazon Prime, because here in the UK, it's the evening now. Okay, perfect. Right. What I was going to do is just quickly review the agenda and so on. So we have the usual, before I get onto that, let's just do the updates to SOIs first. Does anyone on the call have any updates to SOIs that they want to flag? Okay, I'm not hearing anything or seeing anyone in there with their hands up. Oh, okay, Caboose.
Thank you very much, Susan. I apologize to you and to everybody. My nature is I am a straightforward person, very frank, and I don't hide anything. Point one, we are turning around ourselves for more than a year. This is not very efficient. It is not fault of anyone, but it's a collective fault. And we have to remedy that. We cannot continue this. I request you, as a convener or chair or pilot of this important meeting, please kindly take necessary action that we stop to turning around ourselves.
Thank you.
Now, okay, I don't, I'm sorry, I have not finished yet. I don't agree with paragraph A, expand the uncompromised proposal. There was no compromise proposal. We did not agree to that compromise. We did not know the impact of that. We did not know whether it requires the change of the bylaw. Has nothing to do with my distinguished colleagues who proposed that. I am talking of the song, but not on the singer. We can't continue to have compromise and compromise and compromise and new solutions. It's quite clear. A start of the things, repose period, extension or not extension, that's all. But I don't understand the situation. Please kindly take us to the correct way.
Thank you. So at the moment, I'm just reviewing the agenda and I will touch on the compromise proposal when I do that. But your comments are noted. Thank you, Caboose. Okay, so we had a couple of action items. It says from the last meeting, the first one, number A, that Caboose has just mentioned, was actually a holdover from a meeting a couple of, possibly one or two meetings ago, where we had discussed the compromise or the suggestion that Flip had raised with us, and a number of people on the call felt that it would be helpful to see something in writing so that they could better understand what it was that Flip was proposing or the path that Flip had suggested. You will have all seen that Flip has now circulated that, and I hope that you have had an opportunity to look at it. When we come on to item four and the discussions on the time for filing, I think we will come back to this. But we already have noted Caboose's concerns about that proposal and the if you like the backward step. But the reason for that is because this was something from a couple of meetings ago. So the second action item was one for Sam or possibly it was Sam and Liz. To look at how inaction has been pleaded in past IRPs. And I think perhaps this is something, again, that we will come to when we get to item four, I think. Does that sound okay, Sam?
Yes, we're almost complete with this. We don't have the substantive update, but it'll be coming within the next few days.
Okay.
Yeah.
Perfect. Thank you. Then we, our agenda item three will be an update from the subgroup that's working on consolidation. And then our main agenda item is to come back to the discussions on the time for filing. And I can sense your frustration, Caboose, and indeed I think it's shared by many of us. We do all hope to be able to bring this to a conclusion soon, I think. Okay, and then agenda item five, just looking ahead to upcoming meetings. We have our next meeting on the 16th of March. That will fall handily into the week that is between the ICANN prep week that starts next week and then the
ICANN 70 Community Forum, which will be the week after that. So we don't have a meeting during the community forum, obviously, but in fact, our regular rotation of every 2 weeks will take us to having a call on the 16th of March. Okay, so, back, Cavus, is that a new hand or the old one from before?
It's a new hand. You know, Susan, okay. I am much older than you. I'm much senior than you, but I'm not more knowledgeable than you. But please respect me. I was in the middle of my intervention. You interrupted me 2 times. Please, kindly, respectfully, humbly, don't do that again. Thank you.
I very much apologize. I'm sorry. And certainly I realized that I'd interrupted you 1 time. I hadn't realized I was doing so. There was a long pause, and so I started to speak. But I certainly apologize. I didn't appreciate I've done so twice. So if there was something, if I cut you off and you have more you want to say, then please continue. Okay, I'm not hearing from you, so I will continue, but you should please feel free to put your hand up at any time, Cavus. Okay. So I think we can go straight into agenda item 3 in substance. And we have a few of our participants in this meeting are in the small group on consolidation, who were looking at that rule. I want to say 7, I think it's rule 7, that's dealing with consolidation, intervention, and participation as an amicus. And I confess that on our last IoT call, I had indicated that we felt we were getting close to the end of our work and that we hope to be able to have our substantive output and submit it to this group quite soon. In fact, on our last call, a sort of question about our scope came up. And for those of you who've had the opportunity to read my email from a little earlier today, you will have seen where I set out the question that we wanted to put to this group to get more guidance. But in case some of you haven't had the opportunity, I will just quickly summarize it now, which is that as we were looking at this, I think some of our group in particular felt that perhaps we'd taken a slightly different approach on that rule 7 to say the in-depth review that we've been conducting on some of the other rules, including in fact the timing one, and felt that perhaps, you know, we really ought to be undertaking a more critical assessment that was looking into things like what is the intent of the section, what is the problem that we're trying in this group to fix, if any, what input did we get in public comment period, what have been the previous discussions on this topic, and to the extent that we're proposing amendments to the language, is that fixing the problem that's perceived, and is it doing so without causing any other issues? And in particular, the aspects of Rule 7, where it was felt that perhaps a deeper dive is needed, related both to the nature of the role of an amicus participant and to the specific guidance that we might provide to a procedures officer, or whatever we call that person, if we give them a different title, but that role of the arbitrator who considers these applications. And then particularly the point for referring this back to this group is that within our sub-team, I think we were not clear on whether that exercise is within the scope of the task that we'd been asked to perform by this group. Certainly some of our members at a minimum felt that they were unclear whether they knew if it was in scope or not. And so we felt that it was appropriate to come back and seek further guidance on whether either this group feels that kind of deeper dive and potentially more wide-ranging amendments the current straw person was already anticipated and envisaged by this group, or if it wasn't anticipated, then nevertheless, is that something that this group wants to task us with? Or does this group feel that actually that discussion ought to happen in the full working group and that we should pause our work on that basis? And so, as I said in my email, I feel that the scope of the subteam was intended to be as wide as needed. But I say that on the basis of perhaps what I had intended for that group, and that doesn't necessarily reflect what everyone else had appreciated. So I do agree that I think it's appropriate that we come back and seek some more guidance. But specifically, the reason why I personally feel that it's within scope, if you want it to be for the subteam, is that, you know, we had some discussions on various aspects of those rules. We had a straw person that I'd circulated that had, you know, some amended text, but also various comments and issues flagged in the margin about, you know, further considerations that were needed, including around things like clarifying the procedures officer role, what considerations might be should be allowed for when considering an application for one of these interventions or consolidations. And whether the classes of persons identified as being able to participate as an amicus was the right list of persons. So whilst that doesn't necessarily directly address some of the issues that the subteam think we might also need to cover, I think in itself it flagged a sort of range of issues that we felt, you know, that the subteam was effectively being charged to look at. So I will stop talking there. I'm very happy to hear from anyone else in the subteam if they would like to expand or correct on what I've said, or indeed from anyone in this group with views on this. And you know, really, we are keen to get the guidance from this group on whether we can continue with this task, or whether the group as a whole thinks we should be moving it back into the full working group. So I am going to pause. Nothing to add from Christina. Okay. Does anyone on this call have views on this topic? Cavus, thank you.
Yes, dear Susan, please correct me if I heard it wrongly. You want to establish four working group under the IoT? Or I mistakenly heard something differently?
So we already have, Cavus, we have a subgroup already of people who had volunteered to take the work that this group had already done, where we had a number of discussions on the Rule 7, which is the rule dealing with consolidation, intervention, and participation as an amicus. And we've made some progress and felt that we'd reached the point where a small group would be able to progress things further and come back to this group with a recommendation of what they think Rule 7 should look like. And so we have a group of volunteers from this group, but a smaller group who have been meeting on the alternate week. So we met, the consolidation group met last week. So yes, I'm not proposing a new group, I'm proposing a group that does exist already. But we are keen to be just getting guidance from this group on whether some of the work that we are doing, whether that is what this group had envisaged or not.
Yes, as long as there are clear term of reference mandate for them, And as long as they are informal, and as long as they bring the matter to our group, and as long as they help to progress, I have no difficulty. But we have to have clear, and we don't want again to turn back and turning around ourselves. So they should follow certain instruction from the main group, but not starting something from the scratch again. So follow up action, instruction from this group, most welcome if they do something to facilitate our work, because every 15 days is maybe not sufficient. And I appreciate their volunteerness to do that, but provided that they do not take different paths, that they do not start a new path or new solutions. Thank you.
Thank you, indeed. That was part of the reason for setting up that group, to try to make progress on these rules more quickly. Okay, I am not seeing any other hands. If there is anyone else who wants to share thoughts on this now, then that would be great. Otherwise, perhaps I could ask you all to look at my email and share your views on our mailing list. And I sort of hesitate to say that if we don't hear to the contrary, we will continue with the path that we think is appropriate. But it would be preferable if we could have some specific input from this IoT to confirm that you're happy with that. Okay, I'm not seeing any more hands, so I think we should move on. So our next action item is to revert back to the time for filing and the discussion on that. So with some hesitation, bearing in mind the objections already raised to Flip's document, I think nevertheless, Flip has taken an action item that we gave him and has now circulated the document that he was asked to circulate. And so I think it is appropriate for us to at least have any comments or initial comments that anyone has on that that they would like to share now. Again, if not, there are always opportunities to respond on the email list, or indeed to ask to bring something back to an agenda for a future meeting. I will say, I thank you, Flip. I think you're on the call. Thank you very much for doing that. It was what we asked of you, and so it is appreciated. I certainly have found it very helpful in understanding the structure that you had been talking about on a previous meeting, and found it a really interesting proposal. I do share the reservations that Cavus has expressed around the fact that this is, or at least I feel that the reservations Cavus was expressing about the fact that this is something that is very different to what we currently have under the bylaws. And so it does seem to me that this it would require extensive bylaws changes, because it is essentially a really quite a different accountability structure to the one that's been adopted. And so in that sense, I think for the purposes of our work, I think it seems to me currently to be quite challenging to achieve that kind of wide bylaw change, and perhaps is not something that we should be seeking to do at this point. But I, again, I'm happy to get other people's thoughts and reactions to the proposal. Again, as I said, if people haven't had time to really fully consider it and want to engage in a discussion by email or on a later call, we can also do that. Camus, thank you.
Yes, Suzanne, let me be quite clear. We are not doing anything for ourselves. We are a member of the IoT oversight team to help the claimant. The claimant that is or would be in some sort of victim, not to be duly aware of the impact or consequence of action or inaction of the ICANN on something. Anything that complicates the task of that is not appreciated. The path and procedure and process should be clear, precise, concise, and straightforward. This is apart from that, anything else which may directly or indirectly have impact on the bylaw also is an issue that we don't agree. We have to look something straightforward, clear, precise, and concise. If there is a straightforward line from A to Z, we don't need to go to from A to A1, from A1 to A2, and A3, and come to B. We come directly come from A to B. Because there might be some risk of accident if you are driving from that path. Let's take the straightforward way, which has been tested elsewhere many times in ICANN, maybe for the first time or not really. So I'm not offending anybody. I'm not disagreeing with anybody. I'm just saying that clear, precise, concise, and helping those people who have not been in a position to duly react on something, action or inaction. I hope I was clear. Thank you.
Yes. Thank you very much, David. David, I see you hand as well.
Thank you, Susan. It's David McCauley speaking for the record. And I appreciate Caboose's thoughts, but I did want to say that I've been on vacation leave, PTO, whatever you call it, since last Friday, and I just haven't had a chance to read what Flip has put there. I am extremely grateful, Flip, that you did that. I've just pulled it up before the call. It looks like a lot of thought has gone into it, but I put my hand up, Susan, to say yes when you said maybe we, you know, some of you would like a little bit more time. I'm one of them. I'd like to have a chance to give a close read to what Flip has put before us. We've had a couple of other compromises proposed, and So I will commit to doing that before the next call, but I did want to say I want that opportunity. I would like to take a look. Thank you.
Thanks, David. I think that's fine. As I said, I think we don't make a great deal of use of our mailing list. If people would like to and have thoughts and want to share them by the mailing list, then certainly that would be a good way to make some progress. But we can, of course, also come back to this again on a subsequent meeting. Flip
Pédion, thank you, Susan. I just wanted to say that I think everybody knows in what context this was prepared. This is actually more sharing intellectual views on a topic rather than trying to introduce any change or amendment definitely to bylaws. But I think it's interesting to reflect on this. If it's not for now, it could be for the future. And that's what I meant by we know what the context is in which I prepared this. And I'm happy to have discussions one-on-one or in mail on this topic. Thank you.
Indeed, Flip. And again, thank you very much. And indeed, you know, it is, even if, you know, the three tier structure that you talked about and that we all found very interesting, even if that is not something that we feel we can fit into to our, any compromise that we are trying to create, it doesn't mean that perhaps some, you know, when people are reviewing your proposal, there may be elements of it that they feel could be adopted or could be you know, sort of incorporated, if you like, into something that we are doing. So, you know, it could help shape people's thoughts. Let me put it that way. So again, thank you very much. And I think we can, you know, we don't need to labor this, but yes, for those who've said they haven't had the opportunity to review it yet and would like to do so, then please do think about using the mailing list. And yes, we can also consider if appropriate, if anyone has if anyone would like to discuss it on the next call, we can do so. Okay, so we can now come back to, I guess perhaps this is an opportunity or a good time to just come back to Sam with on the second of those action items, if that is okay.
Sure, thanks, Susan. So we agreed to do some work on how inaction has been pled and what inaction has looked like as it relates to IRP proceedings in the past. And we are very close to having a write-up complete for the group. You'll have it hopefully by the beginning of next week. And it's something that we can discuss in more detail if needed at our next IoT meeting, or of course, we'd welcome reactions on list as well once we send it out.
Sorry, thank you. Thanks, Sam. So that's great. I think this will be useful for us. I think it goes to the discussion of what's the action that's being challenged, but more particularly, it was you know, there'd been some discussion about you know, if there's an inaction from the board, sort of how does that, you know, does inaction continue, and you know, is inaction a continuing action, if you like, or a continuing inaction, thereby perpetually resetting the clock. I think that's the context of how this came up, and so it will be. I think it will be a useful thing to discuss. In the meantime, I'm conscious that we do, you know, we do want to make some progress. I don't want us to be having a wasted conversation. One of the areas that I think we talked about on the last call as being something that it would be very fruitful for us to discuss and to try to you know, come to some agreement on, was around what is the challenged action, to try to understand, again, I think to try to understand what, you know, when we're talking about limitations on timing, when that runs from. I'm not sure. I guess I'm sort of looking to you a little bit, Sam. Do you think that's something we can reasonably discuss at this point, or do we really need to have that research you've been doing on inaction first?
So I think that the conversation about what constitutes an act can be separated from the is there a continuing inaction that would be an alternative for timing. So I think that the two conversations, while related, can be uncoupled.
Okay, thank you. And in which case, if we're proceeding from the assumption that that some kind of a compromise proposal will be including a repose period, it was felt that if we had a better understanding within this group of what the action is that's being challenged during the IRP, it may be that it would flush out where there are concerns, or indeed flush out that we are, that there is less need for concern, that we perhaps are not as far apart as we might seem on the surface to be. So I'm very interested to get thoughts on this, to the extent that anyone has been giving this further thought since our last call. Cavus, I see your hand.
So, first of all, we have to distinguish between inaction and failure. There are two different things. Second, unless it is explained further, what we mean by continuous inaction? A case is before the board. They consider that, examine that, and they found that or convinced that no action is required. So what is the case of continuous no action or inaction? That the person in question bring back the situation for reconsideration? And how many times will be that? So I don't understand the meaning of continuous inaction. Thank you.
Sorry, I forgot to come off mute there. Thank you, Cavus. I think that was my terminology, and so I'll do my best. It's not a defined term in any way. What I was trying to allude to is exactly that question, and I think it's something that we. Actions and inactions of the board are something that can be challenged, or board and staff rather, are something that can be challenged in an IRP. But it was sort of exactly that, is an inaction a one-off event? Or does the fact that something hasn't been done, does that effectively form an ongoing inaction? Of no specific date. I think that is, or at least I hope that is at least in part something that the research that Sam is doing may shed some light on. But it is, I was not suggesting it as something that we've agreed on, but more that as something that we need to have in our mind when we're talking about when is an action challengeable and the timing. But I'll stop talking, and I can see Sam's hand, so I'll turn it over to you, Sam.
Thanks, Susan. My hand was originally up on the more general question, but in terms of a response to Cavus, that's part of the distinction we're looking at, Cavus, just the tension that you noted in your comment. The question that Susan raised on the last meeting was, would an alternative way to looking at an action be that for as long as action hasn't been taken, that every day that action's not taken is basically a new violation? And so I think that's a framing of it that hadn't necessarily been anticipated, or that I was aware was anticipated during the initial drafting of that inaction language, which has been there for for years. It predates even my coming to ICANN. But we're trying to look at that and scope that out a little bit more as it relates specifically to the inaction part. Susan, would now be a good time for me to respond to your more general action question?
Yes.
So thanks. So you might have heard me and Liz discuss this at different points. I know we've raised this along the way. And it's something that we had briefed out with a little bit more detail during the prior iteration of the IoT. And I think we've shared some of those writings with this current iteration of the IoT. But I think it's really important that we understand as an IoT and we come to some level of agreement about what an act means. And again, we'll separate out the inaction portion for now, but when there is an act, when there's something that can be timed from and that's the act that's being challenged, you know, where does it all go back to an original act or are there interim steps along the way that renew an entity's time or a person's time to raise an IRP if they were materially harmed by the new action that was taken? Because in some ways, I think a lot of the conversation that we're having around repose, much of it is premised on the fact that if you don't have the ability to challenge the initial action, then there's no reason to raise an action, right? That we have to be able to tether everything back. But I think that, you know, if we think about those ideas of what action means and also what it means to be accountable to the system and to bring challenges on a timely basis so that poor actions by ICANN, actions that are in violation of the bylaws or articles or those and those that are causing harm are challenged quickly so that those items can be remedied and so that we can, you know, put ICANN's acts back on the right course so that we're not continually making that same mistake, right? That's part of the full accountability of the system, such that there are places where acts occur that they have multiple touch points. So we've talked about the approval of a policy, that's an act by the board. And that approval, if it causes the requisite harm, could be the subject of an IRP if it was alleged to be against the bylaws. But then there will be affirmative steps by ICANN org along the way. It could be, you know, the decision to implement, or now we're having more formally documented implementation steps put into place that when ICANN takes an act, there are many acts, right? Now it could be something that has to do with the new operational design phase that's being introduced. If there's an act that's in there and the, you know, we're taking actions beyond the limit of the bylaws and vendor policy territory, right? That could be a new act. That could be, you know, when ICANN makes the directive to the contracted parties to implement a policy, that's a new act. There could be a new act in a compliance action from ICANN and how that act was done. So, you know, those things can be years down from the original policy action, but then you're really getting to the heart of what did ICANN do when? And so we might not need to come to that question of how long do we need to allow an action to linger and to be not final, if we have the ability to discreetly define an act and put some finality around each one of those acts and how the harm might fall from that. And so I don't know if others on the call have had opportunities to think about it, but we wanted to see if we could, you know, continue to have that conversation and to get some reactions from others of the IoT, because it could be that there's actually a very, very, very limited set of circumstances that we're actually thinking of in terms of whether repose fits or not. And then we can make a much more informed decision as an IoT as to whether or not it makes sense to impair the finality of decisions across the ICANN ecosystem for that limited defined set. And so I want to make sure that we're all talking about the same thing when we're talking about the world of actions that can be challenged. So with that, I'll turn it back to you, Susan.
Thank you very much, Sam. Yeah, interesting. Food for thought. And hopefully we can have a good discussion on this. I have Caboose in the queue and then after him, Malcolm, but I think it is the new hand, Caboose, so I will return to you.
Yes, thank you, Sam. You always have some brilliant idea and some good analysis of the situation. However, I don't think that we have the task to define what is the action, policy action, non-policy action, ongoing action, and what is inaction, and what is failure. I don't think that we have that task. And I don't think that we have to spend any time on that. It will be directing us to a will we never get out of. The more you dig, the more problem we would have. So our task is to implement the bylaw and the task given to us, talking about repose time and reaction of the claimant who has difficulty to be alerted directly or indirectly on time. So I don't think that we have to get in such a complex area. I'm not objecting to what you're saying. I admire your way of thinking, but I think that it is not a mandate of the group to get into that sort of discussions, because we're digging more and we will be more involved in something that we may not found any way out of that. Thank you.
Thank you, Kevin. Malcolm.
Thank you, Susan, and good evening, everyone. And thank you, Sam, for that intervention. It's an intriguing idea that we might have actually been arguing at cross purposes by misunderstanding the meaning of action and how that applies in relation to time. And that if we understood that more clearly, we may end up with not quite the same problem that we think we have. Very intriguing and definitely worth investigating closer. So I have a question or two for you to further explain how we should understand your view, action and time. I prepared an example for the consideration of the group some weeks ago now. And I wonder if I could refer to that and ask you to say how you think action would relate in that context as an illustration, so that I could get a better understanding of what the point you're trying to get across. In the example, ICANN had instituted a program, an educational program, and the claimant said that their case was that educational program was out with ICANN's mission and therefore inconsistent with the bylaws. It was some time before it was introduced into their own country and affected them directly. And they wished to make the case that the program was inconsistent with the bylaws, not merely that there'd been some procedural mistake between the decision to embark upon that program and its implementation, but simply that the program was out with the bylaws. So my question is, if that's the case the claimant wishes to make, and if the time since the decision to institute the program has exceeded the time bar. Would the claimant nonetheless be able to say, this program is out with the ultra-virus emission, and therefore all actions in pursuit of this are ultra-virus, and therefore, and please declare that so? Would they be able to bring that case? Or would, without asserting any particular irregularity in how it has been done, merely that it has been done? Or would they be time barred because the decision to institute the program, the time had already expired, and nothing other than proper and correct implementation of that policy had occurred since? Which way would it fall?
Thanks, Malcolm. So I think it depends on, as with anything that's pled, it depends on the specificity of the circumstances. However, if there is a current ICANN Act, let's define current as, let's just presume it's in a world with a repose and it's current as within the repose period and within the days, right? So if they're pointing to an act such as ICANN rolling out the program in their area, and that they're stating that ICANN rolling out that program in their area is an act that ICANN is taking against ICANN's bylaws, then then it's very likely that the issue of timeliness of the IRP is no longer at issue, right? Because what repose does is it talks about the issue of timeliness. That's one of the gating factors to get the item before an IRP panel. Then what the outcome of that IRP declaration is a separate issue.
Yeah,
but it's always a separate issue under an IRP, because the IRP panels, we know, are the declarations are now considered to be binding and set precedent on ICANN, right? And so if we then have an IRP panel saying, you have brought this in a timely fashion, you pointed to an act within X number of days and X number of months or years, whatever that repose period is that's defined. So you have the right to have this heard within the IRP. That's what repose is. It's about the right to hear the claim. Then the extent of the backwards action that falls out of the IRP's declaration depends on what the declaration says and what they've challenged. So whether or not the claimant says that everything that ICANN did under this program was against ICANN's mission, or if they've termed it as what ICANN did in this instance caused me harm, did something with my competitive interests, was against ICANN's bylaws in that way, there still will be a declaration at the end about ICANN's acts. And then ICANN with its community will have to then consider what the lasting effects of that are, right? A panel can't just, a panel can say that an act was against the bylaws or against the articles, right? That's what we're asking them to do, but they can't dictate what ICANN does with that in any event.
No, and I understand. I appreciate that. Absolutely.
Right. And so I think, you know, when we're trying to solve a problem to allow a panel the swath to cut out years worth of action, that's not necessarily what the panel would be empowered to do in any event, right? The panel would be expected to look at everything that's laid out. And if the panel then comes with a declaration that says, hey, ICANN, you acted outside of your mission when you did this, because of the precedential nature of it, because of the binding nature of it, ICANN needs to then step back and go, whoa, were we wrong with this entire thing? If ICANN doesn't take that step, no matter when that IRP is taken, that's a different accountability issue, right? That becomes the broader accountability issue between ICANN and its community that ICANN's been acting in a certain way, and I can point, and the community can point to the whole history of it to say, hey, did we do this wrong, right? The IRP panel,
absolutely, Sam. And sorry, Sam, I was trying to be narrow here in my question. I understand that. I mean, if there were a declaration that that program was completely ultra-virus, clearly it would be up to the board to decide what to do about it. And that wouldn't necessarily mean seeking to unwind everything that had ever been done. It might not be possible to unwind everything that had ever been done right from the get-go. Yeah, but nonetheless, it would be significant that the whole program had been declared ultra-virus as opposed to merely some misstep at the moment. But more particularly, from the claimant's point of view, there's a big difference between them being entitled to say, you have just done this to introduce this program yesterday, yeah, but I'm not claiming that what you did yesterday was any more, would have been wrong if the program was legitimate. Yeah? I don't have to identify some particular recent complaint here. The whole thing is ultra-virus, and you're still doing it, and it's still ultra-virus. Yeah? If they are able to argue that, and it's still and it's timely to do so, to present that argument to the IRP, that's radically different than if they're told, no, you have to find something that happened within the recent time, but saying that this program is fundamentally flawed is something you're out of time to argue. That argument cannot be heard. Yeah.
So I don't necessarily think the two are mutually exclusive, but I see that we also have a queue. So I'd like to turn to Susan to see how you want to navigate this discussion.
Thank you. Yes. And I'm not certain, but I put myself in the queue. And so I think I'm next. I hope Greg will forgive me if I'm not. I will be really quick and I wouldn't normally do this, but I felt I wanted to ask a question or express an understanding of what you've said. And I wanted to do it, you know, to have the opportunity to quickly do it. So it seems to me, from what you're saying, and indeed from what Malcolm is saying, that in that specific example of the language sort of service rollout, the claim, of course, is that you know operating these language services is outside of the bylaws, is outside of ICANN's mission, and so is you know a breach of the bylaws, and is something that's open to an IRP. And I had been interpreting, I had definitely been viewing this in the same way that Malcolm has been viewing it in terms of the timing. But taking the view that you know then when you roll out into, I think it's Mauritania or wherever the country is, 3 years down the line or however long this is, the rollout is, there is nothing intrinsically wrong with the rollout itself into a new territory because it's a program that's been adopted, and albeit that the program itself is we would argue, you know, wrong, then taking that program on and rolling it out into different countries, the actual rollout, there's no improper act. But what I'm hearing you say is that actually that may not be the case because essentially, you know, each time something rolls out, that's another act of implementing a program which is outside of the bylaws. And in terms of Mauritania, you know, they are obviously challenging the rollout into that particular country. Sorry, the claimant is, and the declaration would be in relation to that particular act. But of course, it may be that in the declaration, if the declaration is also saying, you know, operating language services is outside of the bylaws and a breach of, sorry, outside of the mission and a breach of the bylaws,
that the board would then, you know, the board could ignore that, obviously, but the board probably ought to then take a look at their whole language program and think, do we need to reconsider this? But that I'm hearing you say that you don't think that the claimant in this circumstance would be told, I'm sorry, you're out of time, because you didn't challenge the decision to adopt the language program 3 years ago. Am I understanding you correctly? I think I am. I'll probably go to the rest of the queue because I expect lots of people have got sort of questions and comments on what you said. So if you don't mind, I'll probably go to Greg, who has his hand up, and then Scott, and then we'll sort of circle back to you, Sam, if that's all right. And I am not hearing Greg. I don't know if anyone else is. Greg, I think you may be on the dreaded double mute.
Can you hear me now?
Yes.
Okay, I was on the dreaded wrong microphone. Now that there's so many sophisticated possibilities in Zoom for selecting audio and video capabilities. In any case, what I was trying to say was that without presuming to get in the way of your authority, Susan, I'd actually be interested in Sam's response to what you were saying, because it may influence or eliminate my question or point, or make it, you know, more pointed.
Okay, then. All right. Well, then, if that's okay with Scott as well, then I will go to Sam, if that's all right.
So I'm going to defer to Liz a bit. I dropped audio at the most unfortunate time, and I've just come back just to hear Greg's question to me. So I missed a lot of what Susan said, but Liz has been on the entire time. So I'm going to defer to her to answer, and then I'll come in as necessary.
Thanks, Sam. Thanks, Susan. This is Liz Lay for ICANN org, for the record. So I think in the scenario that we're looking at here, there's a challenge that to the implementation of the program itself, and that challenge would be timely under the time limit set in the IRP. The question is whether or not that challenge, the claimant can also in that challenge make a challenge to the actual program itself, which was adopted, say, by the board four years ago in Malcolm's scenario. And I think in that situation, if you're challenging the actual program itself, there's an outer limit that is on the challenge of that program, which is depending on right now, it's 12 months. So it's an outer limit of when the program was implemented. So it doesn't, I think that time to challenge the implement or the adoption of the program has passed. So while the claimant may try and the claimant might make an argument to challenge the adoption of the program, there's a timeliness issue there. I think what Sam was addressing in her scenario is if in the challenge of the implementation itself, say the IRP panel comes back and in finding there is a merit to what the claimant has challenged in implementation, and the IRP panel also reaches back to say that it, in its opinion, there are issues with the adoption of the program, what I am hearing Sam say, and I think that it would be true, is that the board would look to the declaration itself and consider or whether or not there was an issue with the program. So it almost doesn't matter whether or not the claimant can assert a challenge to the policy itself. There's touch points along the way. There are new touch points of when an action is taken. In this case, the implementation, that allows them to assert a timely challenge to the current conduct. And, you know, as part of that, there is an evaluation of the current conduct as it relates to the program. I hope that addresses your question.
I think so. It raises some questions for me again, but I am going to go to my queue. So, Greg.
Thanks, Greg Chatton, for the record, and that was helpful. A couple of points, and this is, you know, extremely nuanced discussion, and I'm sorry, my points might come in slightly orthogonally. One, I think a big concern that we have generally is whether decisions of the panel will be retroactive, or to what extent will they be retroactive. And that may be something that we want to provide some guidance on. When we're talking about past conduct, which is typically what you're talking about, even if the remedy is in the future, it's kind of, you expect things to be retroactive, unlike laws, which are generally not retroactive. You know, if you criminalize something in January 1st, having done it on December 31st doesn't make you a criminal. I think here it seems like there's maybe an artificial line being drawn, and it may be very hard for a plaintiff or complainant to assert that an action is outside the board's remit or outside the bylaws. Maybe that in some cases you'll have a policy or which itself is within the bylaws, but in the implementation or in a particular implementation, it's outside the bylaws. There may also be a situation where the whole program, root and branch, is ultra virus. It seems to me that there should be the ability to assert both of those things on the complainant's part, and then the panel would have the discretion in reviewing it to consider that. I think it puts too much on the panel to expect them to kind of get to that, well, the larger issue sua sponte, and not allow the complainant to raise that issue. In some sense, you know, in terms of the question of repose, I think that gets to the issue of how far back retroactivity goes, especially when there have been earlier actions. And that's where I think we may, you know, somewhat counter to what I said before, provide guidance that we're not necessarily, you know, requiring the panel to unwind all prior actions. Don't want to make this like a dirty cop scenario where all cases that, you know, a cop who used manufactured evidence, you know, false evidence, you go back and reopen all those cases and, you know, relitigate them. If there's something that's been in place for a number of years saying it needs to be unwound, I think it could be unwise and impossible. There, I don't know if there's any way to come up with a right line for that. It really depends so much on the facts and how long the underlying policy has been in place. But I think that in a sense is the problem of trying to come up with some right line, right rules on repose, as opposed to giving the panel discretion to decide what the scope of their decision is, both with regard to the claimed action or inaction and with the potential remedy that it ends up recommending. Thanks.
Thank you, Greg. Scott.
Thanks, Susan. I always hate to follow Greg because either he says one of the things I was thinking, and then I can't remember which one he said, and undoubtedly I might duplicate it. But this hypothetical that Malcolm has brought up, I really like because it takes me back to my days of teaching trademark law and drafting final exams. And it seems to me that there's some items in here that he's trying to get at specifically to poke holes or to expand certain aspects of what we're trying to do to see where the edges are. And I'm going to go back to something I've threatened to provide to this group and still have yet to do, which I'll try and find the PDF that I had. And that is an analysis of repose versus statutes of repose versus statutes of limitation. Because I think that what I'm straining to deal with, and I sensed it a bit in what Greg was saying, and I think that it is also what Liz was getting at in her discussion, but here's my shot at it. And that is that we don't want to undo the origination because, as Malcolm has carefully crafted in the facts here, there's been tremendous benefit from this program for its first 4 years. It was only after it ran into its fifth year and expanded into Ruritania, that it ran into a conflict. And so we've been grasping at this concept of how can we undo, unscramble the egg, however you want to put it, undo all the good that's been done just because Edutania, a for-profit training skills provider, thinks that it's wrong for ICANN to have done this. And I guess my thinking on that, going back to my original comment about statutes of limitation versus statute of repose, it seems to me it's more in the what triggers the ability to file a claim. In other words, we have the origination of this entire program, and whether that is ultra vires, whether that is beyond ICANN's remit in its bylaws. But then we also have the next act that occurs, which is the expansion. And it also speaks to, and Malcolm gives us some very detailed facts here, that it was targeted, that there was something in the plan. I don't know if that was original. I don't know if that was done on a year-by-year basis. And I don't know if that's something that could be the basis for a claim, any one of those acts along this timeline. But my suggestion is that perhaps there should be a second basis for claims within a program, a multi-year program like this, that is like a statute of limitations, where when this subsequent act occurs, such as expansion, that then there is not an opportunity to undo the entire program, undo all the good that has been done over the previous 4 years, but then in fact, it would be a carve out, essentially, for those who would be affected in each year of expansion, such as Edutania in dear old Ruritania, to come forward with their claim as to how the implementation in year five has occurred, and that has either violated whatever is within the original program as created, as passed, as approved by ICANN and its board, or something that is more limited in terms of both recovery and when it can occur. So I'm not getting at as much the end, you know, that the 120 days, how terrible, we've now left those people 5 years down the road stranded. No, but we should try to create a new beginning, a commencement date that's relative to the subsequent action and implementation that has taken place.
Thanks, Scott. I think others will correct me. I think that's where the discussion about retroactivity was coming in. I think you were on the same page. I think with some others particularly with Sam's comment about decisions can't have sort of retroactive effect.
I'm going to interrupt you because I'm not looking backward. I'm just saying that there should be something put in place that as each new year, if you will, or each new expansion occurs, that there would be an opportunity, a new 120-day period or some period for people to react. Not that it would undo, look backward and retroactively affect the undoing of the entire program. I'm just saying it should in fact be forward-looking, but it would only commence with the triggering of the next expansion.
Yeah, this is a really interesting way of looking at this. So I think it's proving to be a really useful discussion. Anyway, I have two more hands, so Malcolm.
Thank you, and thank you, Scott, as well. But I want to go back to the concerns that Greg was raising about retroactivity. I think, Greg, you will, a lot of those worries evaporate when you consider the very limited nature of the IRP and its and the very limited remedy that it can offer. Suppose that Edutainia were allowed to have its case heard, and suppose its only case was that this program is completely ultra vires the bylaws, and that there's really no way around that. There's no correction or cure that you can do. It just shouldn't be done. And suppose that decision, that argument were upheld by the IRP, by the IRP panel. The only thing the IRP panel can do is to say, this is ultra vires the bylaws. This is inconsistent with the bylaws. There's no question of retroactivity of application of that, or indeed any kind of application of that, because the IRP has no power to decide how that should be applied, or when, or to reaching back, or any of that. All it says is that this is inconsistent, the bylaws. It then falls to the board. Now, the board have a legal duty to act consistently with the bylaws. If they, as Sam said earlier, if they had such a ruling and said, oh, well, we wash our hands of that, when we're just going to completely ignore it, then there'd be a much more fundamental governance issue there. Yeah, but on the assumption that we don't face that the board pays a proper regard to such rulings, in which I still have confidence, it then falls to the board to decide, what do we do about that? And it may well be that the board says, well, for things that have happened in the past, there's nothing that we can reasonably that we can do with it. We've made these commitments, we've done these things, we've paid these things out, we can't unwind that. That's past. What we can do with this is make sure that we don't continue it in error. And so henceforth, this program stops. That would be a decision the board can make following such a ruling. And I would argue that if that were to be what the board decided to do in that, Edutainia, as a claimant, would find themselves entirely satisfied, and that they would, everyone would have cause to say that the accountability mechanisms to ensure that they were protected had absolutely discharged and had a very powerful effect, protecting Edutainia from this corporate Goliath coming in. And that they had had everything they could have wanted to, without doing anything in the remotest bit retroactive about other things that have been done in the past, just simply saying, we're not going to do it now. So I think that would be that remedy is very limited, but it is, I think, very powerful and very valuable. And that's why I'm spending so much time and effort seeking to protect it as I see it. But it does raise the question whether or not Edutainia is able to go before the panel and say and make that argument and potentially to have it upheld, or whether they would be told, no, this has been going on for years. There is nothing new that you have identified, so you're out of time. And I'm afraid then I'm still confused as to the advice from ICANN Legal, because I wasn't entirely clear what Sam was saying, which is why I asked a follow-up question. But it sounded to me like she was edging towards actually Edutainia would then be able to bring that case and have it heard. And then when I heard Liz speak afterwards, that sounded again to me more like, no, they would not. They would have to identify something that had been done wrong and new, that was separate from the mere fact of that program, which was now blessed by the passage of time, if I understood Liz correctly. And I wasn't entirely clear about that I understood either Sam or Liz fully on that, but what I thought I understood from Sam, then I thought I understood the opposite from Liz. And so I'm still confused and still seek further guidance. Thank you.
Thanks, Malcolm. Yes, and we have Sam's hand up, so hopefully we can get a bit more clarity on that from her. And then I am going to shut the queue. It's 22 minutes after the hour, so we're close to the end of the meeting, but obviously not shutting it before Sam. But Sam will have the last word, I think.
Thanks, Susan, and thanks, Malcolm, and everyone for the thoughtful conversation on this today. So, Malcolm, I think so. Where I stand on this is, if there is an action by ICANN, and that action would be the introduction of the program into Edutainia, that is a new action from which the Edutainian claimant alleges harm and alleges that ICANN taking that act is against the bylaws, that ICANN, because of the proximity and time of that action, because it would fall into that time frame, would not really have a time bar claim to raise, right? That the claimant from Edutainia could satisfy their timing aspect of it to then have the IRP handle the substance of whether or not what ICANN did was against its bylaws or not. And I really appreciated the way that you phrased the retroactivity discussion as well, that it's not a matter of retroactivity. It's about the fact that the panel will make a determination as to whether that act is against the bylaws or not. And then there has to be that the ICANN board's ability to then decide how they're going to act on that declaration. And I think you expressed that very well. I fully agreed with how you expressed how that could come out. So the benefit of tethering things to specific acts of ICANN and each affirmative implementation act, such as rolling that out, gives rise to a new period of action, like Scott was saying, right? We don't have to actually create different types of actions, right? When ICANN does something new, that is a new act. The time clock starts over a time clock starts anew from which a harm can be claimed and an IRP can be given rise to if it is something that is alleged to be against the bylaws. So hopefully that's a clearer statement, Malcolm, of the answer you were looking for.
Thank you, Sam.
Thank you, Sam, and thank you, everyone. This, I think, has been incredibly fruitful. I'm quite sure that a number of us will want to ponder on this more. But I think that actually, as Sam is saying, you know, if we come to a position where we all do feel that these new acts or new activities provide a new act that is IRPable and therefore the time clock starts again, I think that significantly impacts on or reduces a concern about the notion of a repose, I believe. It's 26 minutes after, so we really are sort of at the end of our call time. But perhaps we can, I hesitate to say perhaps we can try this further on the list, but perhaps we can give some thought to some other examples. I think we have Malcolm had a few sort of scenarios that he circulated for stress testing, and maybe we can apply the same concepts to them to start with, but we perhaps could also try to consider a couple of others. If we're able to, then you know, between this call and the next one. But if not, we can circle back to this on the next call, because I think if we can feels some comfort that that in different scenarios that this same situation would apply. I think this is a real help, or at least that's certainly how it seems to me. And I'm hearing from others on the call that they are also taking some comfort from this. Okay, so we, as I say, we have we have some a call in a few weeks. It might be helpful, Sam or Liz, if you could share this with us in writing, just so that we all are confident that we have understood what you've been saying, and also, of course, for the benefit of those who haven't had haven't been on the call, if you don't mind me giving you another action point item, I think it would be extremely helpful for us just to ensure that we are not talking at cross purposes. Other than that, again, thank you very much, everyone, for what I think was a really useful discussion. And let's keep pursuing this chain of inquiry. Okay, I just pausing briefly in case anyone has anything as AOB that they want to raise. I'm not seeing anything. So we can stop the recording and again, thank you everyone very much.
Thanks everyone.